Margaret Neatby is an independent journalist currently traveling, reporting, and blogging in Haiti. He is a key member of the Canada-Haiti Action Network in Halifax and a member of the CKDU News Collective. We spoke on the phone on March 14, 2006. Can you give us a brief overview of the events in Haiti leading up to your visit?
Sure. Most recently, on February 7th, there was a presidential election which took place. And this actually made it into the Canadian news quite prominently. The election had approximately about 53 total presidential candidates. But the clear front runner was a fellow named René Préval, who was president of Haiti previously in the late 90s. It goes without saying that he won overwhelming support, or his support was far greater than any other candidate. The second candidate with second most support was Leslie Maniga, a candidate, a business person who got about 11% of the vote. Préval, it's difficult to tell exactly how much support that Préval got because the elections were fraught with all sorts of irregularities and allegations of fraud. For example, there were 125,000 votes which were simply annulled by the Haitian Provisional Electoral Council, which is the Haitian government body that was supposed to be overseeing the election, which also received a lot of, about $30 million from the Canadian government. They also counted 80,000 what are called carte blanche, white cards, which are basically blank votes. They counted them as part of the total tally. Initially, the count for Préval 3 days after the election was running at 61% with 20% of the votes counted. 2 days later, that lead dropped to about 48.7% with 50% of the ballots counted, and then it kept kind of dropping. This sort of prompted very large street demonstrations, partly because, there were all these allegations of fraud during the actual election. Polling booths within poor areas surrounding Port-au-Prince simply wouldn't open for 3 to 4 hours. It was generally a lot harder to vote if you were poor or lived in a poor neighborhood. Many people walked for 3 to 4 hours to find a polling station. They found one closed. They went from polling station until they found one. We will perhaps never know how many poor Haitian residents never really had the chance to vote in this election. But, regardless, these demonstrations basically started on February 13th, almost a week after the election had happened, when there wasn't really a completed count. Préval, at that point, was deemed to have 48.7% of the vote by the Electoral Council. That was about 1.3% less than was needed for him to win, to avoid a runoff vote in the presidential election. Anyway, bottom line, so the protests kind of continued for a couple of days, and the pressure kind of mounted from the international community as well on the Provisional Electoral Council, so much so that Préval was declared president of Haiti on February 16th, I believe, in a sort of negotiated settlement. So that's the most recent thing. The thing that has to be understood is that Préval was really a candidate of the 85% majority poor of Haiti. And in fact, Haiti's democracy is relatively young. It's only been around for about 16-odd years. And really, Préval's claim to fame when he was in power was that he presided over the first peaceful transition of power in Haiti's history. He became president after Jean-Bertrand Aristide basically stepped down from power in 1995. Now, by way of background, Haiti, throughout its history, has basically had a long history of kind of violent transfer of power, which kind of culminated under the military dictatorship of the Duvalier years. In 1986, pro-democratic movements originating again from the poorest areas in Haiti, particularly in rural areas, forced Duvalier, Baby Doc, the sort of son Duvalier, to leave Haiti, and Jean-Bertrand Aristide, the Catholic priest, was elected president of Haiti in 1990 with a landslide vote. Basically, that was the beginning of Haiti's democratic period, and it's pretty clear that the international community, particularly the United States, has really tried to disable this period in any way possible, in ways ranging from you know, placing embargoes upon the government of Haiti, the elected government of Haiti, you know, generally circulating unsubstantiated claims about the Aristide government or the government of this party, the Lavalas party. And basically all of this kind of culminated in 2004 when basically a rebellion started originating from the Dominican Republic. There were members of Haiti's disbanded military, which the Aristide government disbanded citing human rights concerns in 1985. About 200 entered the Dominican Republic and began kind of burning buildings, public buildings, in just about every town they kind of went through. They approached the capital towards the end of February, and at that point, there was a departure of Jean-Bertrand Aristide. It's unclear exactly how it happened, but what is known is that he left the country in the company of U.S. Marines in a U.S. chartered plane, which flew from an airport which is being guarded by Canadian forces, military forces. So that's basically the backdrop of what just happened. I mean, Haiti's endured over the last 2 years a period of immense political repression, particularly directed by against the poorest neighborhoods, the poorest areas of Haiti. I mean, political massacre, political detention have been rampant. If you read any human rights report by Amnesty International, Harvard School of Law, etc., and Canada was amongst the most staunch supporters of the unelected government that was installed after Aristide was deposed. And really, you know, even kind of indicates its support of what this government did by the visit of Gerard Latortue to Ottawa and Montreal just last week in the company of Stephen Harper. So that's basically what's recently been going on in Haiti.
Why do you think Canada is so interested in what's going on in Haiti these days?
Well, I mean, there's no easy answer to that. Probably the quickest way of explaining it is that the Martin government basically began its involvement in Haiti, right after Martin became prime minister in 2004 in January, in January 2004 was basically first month in office, and it seems like his involvement in Haiti was an attempt to repair Canadian-American relations after Canada remained outside of the Iraq War, and that was Chrétien's decision, Jean Chrétien. So, I mean, really, there's a lot of evidence from the U.S. ambassador to Canada, Paul Salucci, who claimed that this was a great opportunity for Canada to step up in the international community because the U.S.'s view wasn't really appropriate for a mission like Haiti. But I mean, there's other kind of reasons. I mean, you really have to look at what Aristide accomplished in, between 1994 and 2004. You know, more schools were constructed during that period than any other period in Haiti's 200-year history. There were very successful literacy programs that were set up throughout this country. And again, this is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere by far. Poverty is rampant here. Illiteracy is about 54% of the adult population. Unemployment, around 80 to 90%, but there were still real gains that were made in social areas by the Aristide government, and most of them were made contrary to the advice given by most of the Western powers and by the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank, who tend to control how the economic policies of most third world governments happen. So I really think that Aristide was the threat of a good example. His policies, basically paved the way for social improvements from a government which had very little, and that's where perhaps a bad example for the rest of the third world to go in terms of social development.
What do you think it would take to remove foreign troops from the region?
Well, at the moment there are very few Canadian troops in Haiti. I mean, most of the Canadian role here is that of influence. Canada has one of the biggest influence and gives some of the biggest aid donations to Haiti at this point. About as much were given to this whole electoral process from Canada than from the United States, about $30 million. But I mean, the biggest role that Canada's taken has been taking the lead in training of the Haitian National Police Force over the past 2 years. I mean, the problem with this, of course, is that, the Haitian National Police have been committing gross human rights violations. So really, the sort of military presence in Haiti is under the auspices of the UN. The biggest group of UN soldiers is Brazilian at the moment, with a large contingent from Jordan. What would it take to remove these forces? That's a really difficult question at this point, because the Pregol government, the government that's, or at least the Pregol who's just won the presidential election, is sort of charting a very cautious course. He hasn't really stated whether he wants the immediate removal of international forces. He has stated that he does want violence within these poor communities, raids and incursions within these poor communities to stop, and he wants the release of political prisoners. But again, he's sort of charting a cautious course, and it should really be said that Preval, despite this sort of cautious tone, really had the support of the vast majority of Haiti's population. That much is very clear. Whether you look at the demonstrations that blocked what appears to have been an electoral fraud in mid-February, or even just the fact, the vast numbers of Preval posters that literally outnumber everyone else in pretty much every quarter of Haiti's capital, whether it be Pétionville, the sort of upper-scale area, or in Bel Air, which is one of the poorest neighborhoods where only Preval posters can be seen. I'm not really sure. It would take, I think, probably a recognition of the wrongs that have been committed, not just by Canada and the United States and France, but by the entire international community in Haiti, because it's been the entire UN system that is buttressed and supported at every level the illegitimate and unelected governments of Bashar al-Assad, while very verifiable mass human rights abuses were being committed against Haiti's majority poor.
What has impressed you the most about the grassroots Haiti-Canada network?
The Canada-Haiti Action Network basically kind of formed. Some people started working on the issue of Haiti during the coup and immediately after, but it really started taking off within the last year. The Haiti Action Network has, I think the best thing that's really come out of it is just very clear-cut and very biting journalism and analysis focusing on Canada's role in Haiti. People like Anthony Fenton, the journalist from Vancouver, Eve Engler, the journalist and activist from Montreal, have produced, many articles within papers like the Ottawa Citizen or kind of more lefty-leaning sources like Ravel.ca or ZenNet, which really, really break down Canada's involvement in Haiti. They've done Access to Information Act requests. They've uncovered this meeting that took place in January 1st, 2003, called the Ottawa Initiative on Haiti. It took place at the Meech Lake Resort, in which, according to the chairperson of the conference, the stated goal of this meeting was to discuss the possible removal of Aristide, the possibility of placing Haiti under a UN trusteeship, and the possible return of Haiti's military. So, that seems to have been the line of Canada's official policy at that point, and arguably all three of those aims or topics of discussion have really come true. So really, all of this is starting to come out now, thanks really to the tireless effort of activists across the country. There have been a number of speaking tours of Haitian activists throughout Canada. I think Patrick Elie just visited Halifax this week. He was a former Secretary of State for National Defense and quite responsible for dismantling Haiti's brutal military. He's also a very well-known human rights activist. The connections have been made with media in various locales, in Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, Halifax, with local politicians. Pressure's been placed on the NDP to really make Haiti a bigger issue. And I think it has made quite a bit of a difference. What I do think the Solidarity Network needs to do more of is, now that there is a time of relative calm, these elections have happened, and now most of the raids, most of the human rights abuses are kind of calming down from Haitian National Police or even by the UN force. What could happen now is really a network of support, monetary and otherwise, for development projects which have kind of formed within the poorest neighborhoods. just about a week ago, we visited the community of Bel Air and talked with a grassroots activist named Samba Bukman and another one named Samba Makandal. They experienced in late 2004 a situation in which there was an influx of street youth who entered Bel Air, because at that point the Haitian National Police had taken to apprehending, basically rounding up street youth and murdering them, and then dumping their bodies in a dump outside of the capital. So many basically sought refuge within Bel Air in order to find a more hiding place. They formed a community feeding organization called Zakat d'Enfants, basically to provide the most basic elementary needs to this influx of street youth within their community. They've received, you know, no outside funding from NGOs, from non-governmental organizations. You know, aside from a few individuals abroad, they really haven't received very much in terms of support, aside from, you know, members of the community. Wyclef Jean, their hip-hop artist Wyclef Jean, who's a Haitian, his NGO, Yella Haiti, has provided them with some support, but other than that, they've been pretty much on their own. So I really think that what the network could do is to support projects like this, which otherwise will really be overlooked by the quote-unquote international community and by non-governmental organizations working in Haiti.
Could you provide maybe some kind of contact information in case any listeners out there would like to support some of these grassroots initiatives in Haiti?
Sure. Well, I think the best thing to do is to look up the Canada Haiti Action Network website. And you can find that at www.canadahaitiaction.ca. And there are contact information. There's contact information for organizers in pretty much every major city in Canada who would know information about some grassroots organizations working in Haiti. Also, a good source of information and contact is the Haiti Action Network in San Francisco, and they can be found at www.haitiaction.net. Those are the two main bases of support. There's also a very very effective non-governmental organization called the Haiti CONPAI, which supports quite a number of projects in Haiti, including CONFEV, which is a women's organization that we'll be visiting this week. They can be found at www.haiticonpay.org.
I'm also wondering, Stuart, whether you've encountered any problems as a foreign journalist in the country, perhaps clearing customs. That was something that Patrick Ely spoke about a few days ago here in Halifax, about how he always had trouble clearing the border. Have you had any difficulties on your end?
Well, no, I haven't had any difficulties. But I mean, part of the reason for that, I think, is just that, you know, I mean, number one, Haiti's tourist trade is not in really good shape. I mean, most of the media coverage, whenever the media kind of focuses on Haiti, it's usually because of a coup or violence or political demonstrations surrounding an election. So, I mean, really, they appreciate any kind of tourist-looking individuals that they get. And being a kind of white guy from Canada, I kind of pretty much fit the picture. Also, I mean, to a certain extent, like, the division between rich and poor in Haiti is very large, and is such that generally the elite in Haiti are generally often identified with kind of a lighter skin, kind of mulatto persona. Some are even white. So I mean, generally within this culture, having white skin, rightly or wrongly, kind of almost allows you to go pretty much anywhere you want. That's not to make any kind of racial statement or anything like that. That just seems to be kind of how it works. So no, I haven't really been given any difficulties in terms of crossing the border here. Perhaps I might on the way back into Canada, but no, I've had no problems.
All right, Stuart, thanks a lot. Would you have any closing comments to offer our listeners?
Yeah. Sure. I guess just something that I'd like to add, just in talking about these elections, I'll sort of reinforce the points made by Patrick Ali, likely on CKDU radio, in noting that really on February 7th and in the days after, the Haitian people really taught the world a lesson about popular democracy. They essentially blocked what the evidence indicates was an electoral fraud, totally supported by the international community. The United States, viewed as kind of, you know, a model for democracy in the world, did not block. The population were unsuccessful in blocking an electoral fraud. So in many ways, no one can really teach the Haitians lessons about democracy. They've bled for it. They've literally died for it. What I think our role in Canada should be is to question really the motivations and the real actions that Canadian taxpayer dollars are going towards in Haiti, whether it be this questionable training of a police force that is knowingly committed extremely brutal human rights abuses, or the 3,500 quote-unquote electoral observers who were, you know, from partisan groups who were given funding by the Canadian International Development Agency to monitor, quote-unquote, these elections that just happened. Of course, they declared it free and fair right after the election had happened on February 7th before the count had even been made. And even, Jean-Pierre Kingsley, an Elections Canada employee who had the international monitoring mission in Haiti, still stands by the claim that the elections that happened on February 7th were the fairest, that the best that Haiti has ever had. Quite, you know, leaving aside the fact that Haiti has had four. This is the fourth election that Haiti's had, and the previous elections were far more organized, according to several journalists we've talked to, according to just about every Haitian we've talked to. It's clear that the role of the Canadian government is to legitimize, first, the presence that they've taken, their role in Haiti since the coup of February 29th, 2004, and to really undercut any kind of democratic government in Haiti, because really the makeup of the rich and poor in Haiti is such that, you know, given the fact that 85% of the country's population is considered to be either absolutely poor or under the poverty line, any real democracy would serve the interests of the poorest Haitians more so than, you know, a sort of political elite which you know, tends to maintain power in most other Latin American countries or most developing countries. So really, it seems clear that Canada's policy in Haiti has been to like that of the United States, to subvert at every turn real democracy in this country. And this is really something that Canadian citizens have a responsibility to speak out against and to really hold our governments to account for.
Stuart, I would like to thank you very much for joining us here on CKDU.
Okay.
And I would like to wish you a safe trip home.
Okay. Thanks very much, Candace.
You have been listening to an interview with Stuart Neatby, an independent journalist reporting from Haiti, on your local campus community radio station.